We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. As always, your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, the right one, Ryan Schwann. And now it's time for your Pelican's Fix. Welcome to a new season of In the Know podcasts covering the first season of Pelicans basketball. I hope you're as excited to hear us back as we are to be back. You also notice we have a new opening on our podcast, this featuring the music of Scott Burton. Tonight, we'll be knocking off the rust with the help of Kevin Pelton of ESPN. And just to make you all look forward to it, tomorrow night we'll be having another podcast out there with Jason Calmes and I asking all the questions of Larry Kuhn you could ever want to hear about the CBA. New Orleans basketball is back, people, and so are we. Michael and I are joined by Kevin Pelton of ESPN Insider, formerly of the Basketball Prospectus. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me back on.
We had you last time. I think our team has changed pretty significantly since the last time we talked about this team. Got a bunch of new additions. I've been like eyeballing ESPN Insider and all of your guys' articles. I am a little disappointed that you and Doolittle aren't spending all those articles talking about the Pelicans.
Well, it would have been weird to break into that in the middle of, you know, the Golden State Warriors player profiles. But, yeah, we're going team by team right now with the player capsules that Bradford, Tom Haberstroh, and I did. And Bradford was the one who did the Pelicans. Caught myself that time. You're probably going to have him on at some point before the season to talk about that. But, you know, I've also been paying attention to them and following their offseason moves as well, obviously.
Yeah. I'm actually really – so I think I feel like I'm kind of the same boat where a lot of people are, where this team – I almost wrote an article early on this summer where as excited I am about getting a new influx of young, pretty athletic players, there's basically question marks at almost every position on this team. There's some – at every single position, you can come up with a really good question like, what is going to happen here? Because I have no idea. So – just to open up, I think the big acquisition, the big trade on draft night, Drew Holiday comes in for pretty significant price tag. Nerlens Noel was the highest rated guy out there, and next year's pick. So no advanced statistician seems to really like Drew Holiday. So what is your take on Drew?
Well, I'd say it's less about not liking Drew Holiday and more about maybe not liking this move. Just in my case, and you know, I graded it pretty poorly on draft night. It was entirely a value proposition. So Jrue Holiday is a guy who's already completed his rookie contract and is now on starting the extension that he signed last year in Philadelphia. And it's a pretty favorable one. I think it should be pretty fair and, you know, even a good value for the Pelicans over the next 4 or 5 years here. But the most value in the league you get is with guys on their rookie contracts. So to give up both the number 6 pick and, you know, potentially one that could have been in the lottery if they had gone more, I don't know if I want to say conservatively, but, you know, tried to spend another year developing young talent before making their big move next year as opposed to this summer. I think that's where that move kind of graded out poorly in my mind, because you're just giving up a lot of value potentially. It's not just Jrue Holiday versus Noel and the draft pick. It's Jrue Holiday versus Noel, the draft pick, and what else you could have done with the money you're paying to Jrue Holiday. But, you know, him specifically, he had kind of a disappointing second half after he made the All-Star game last year. But at the same time, you know, you look at it, and the key with him is that he's still so young. I mean, he's, let's see here, what?
23,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are guys, he's not that much older than some of the, you know, college veterans that were in the first round of this year's draft. So that's, I think, the appealing thing with him is that he's still got time to develop. And historically, point guards have tended to peak later than players at other positions. So I think that's the encouraging thing, that he still potentially has some room to grow.
Yeah, Kevin, you mentioned that he really did fall off in the second half of the season. And it's noticeable. I think there was a narrative by some people who didn't really watch Jrue play last year that he kind of made the All-Star game by default because of Rondo's injury, Rose being out, you know, Deron Williams not being at full speed. But he was a legitimate All-Star in the first half of last season. If those numbers would have kept up, we're talking about 18 points, 9 assists on 45% shooting, you gave the grade of the draft night trade a D. If those numbers had carried throughout the whole season, he played that way for 82 games, would your grade have been a little different, a little more favorable that night?
It certainly would have been more favorable. Like I said, it was mostly about the money and the value situation. But, you know, if he's that kind of elite prospect where he's an all-star at 22, 23 and going to get better from there, then, you know, that's a guy who's worth 2 lottery picks. You know, I think that he's potentially going to be in that mix, but I think he's probably more, you know, towards the back end of the top 10 point guards in the league, or, you know, that sort of discussion where it starts to be several guys who are of similar value. You know, I look at someone like Jeff Teague is probably in a fairly similar sphere, you know, maybe a little bit behind Holiday, but, you know, that kind of group of players as opposed to a perennial all-star type at this point.
Yeah, and I totally buy into the point about the financial aspect. I mean, you're right. You're talking about Noel, the 2014 pick, and maybe an MLE free agent. But what about long term? Because the best case scenario in that scenario you propose is that Noel pans out, the 2014 first round pick pans out, and then you have to pay him like we saw Paul George get paid, or you're in an Oklahoma City Thunder situation where, you know, in a best case scenario, all your draft picks pan out and then you probably can't keep them all. I mean, long term, I guess you're hoping that your draft picks turn into a player as good as Jrue Holiday or Tyreke Evans anyway. While rookie contract guys are the most valuable piece in the league, don't you also have to factor in that if they do hit, eventually, you know, you're going to have to pay them huge amounts of money when they're at the age where they're actually going to help you win?
Well, you know, I guess I would say that in Oklahoma City's case, it's still a good problem to have, even if you're losing James Harden and still having, you know, 3 extremely talented young players like they have. So if it was that case with Anthony Davis and, you know, say Noel, even though I'm not even sure that Noel and Davis could have played together. So that specific makes it a little difficult to evaluate the trade. But, you know, I think the big thing with Holiday is you have that certainty about it. You know, potentially Noel could be a bigger game changer than Holiday, but you know what you're getting. He's a certain quality, and I think there's value in having that, certainly.
Yeah. So I'm going to leak one of my pieces that is coming out later this week a little bit here. I have a post where Dell has, since the day he came in as a general manager, has said he wants young veterans. He's never said he wanted to rebuild through the draft. He's never said he wanted to try to, you know, like get older veterans to teach anyone. The one repeated strategy point he said over and over again is, I want to get young veterans. And that was like what Jason Smith was supposed to be. And he's supposed to be following along that. Robin Lopez was the same theory. So it seems to me that what you're really saying when you say you want young veterans is you want to eliminate any bust potential while still have the potential that they could grow to something even greater than they are. So making that leap, I mean, Drew Holiday, we've already kind of talked about him. If he's what he was before the All-Star break, he could be pretty good, pretty amazing. Otherwise, not. But Tyreke Evans is a guy who was overhyped pretty badly when he came into the league and managed at 25-5 on an insane number of minutes. But isn't he exactly that kind of thing? He's already proven he can play at a pretty high level. Do you think that there is still a chance he could peak higher than he is right now? Or does the fact that he's kind of been declining over the past few seasons really weigh on like his projections?
It definitely brings him down. I mean, the fact that his rookie year now is outside of what Shaney, my projection system, considers as far as generating his projection for next season and beyond doesn't help. But, you know, he bounced back quite a bit last year. It was actually a pretty solid season for him. And I think part of the issue is just, you know, he's getting graded against that standard that he set during his Rookie of the Year campaign. And that's awfully hard to live up to. But you can still be less than that and be a useful player. And I think he was last year. That's what made him, I think, interesting is a restricted free agent, is that usually you don't see guys that young with that level of accomplishment change teams very often. So I think was a lot higher on the Tyreke signing than a lot of people around the league were.
Yeah, I mean, you actually, going into the off season, you actually had him at a projected warp of 14.2, which was about 50% higher than your projected warp on Iguodala. I mean, Evans got 4 years, $44 million, taking out the fact that the Pelicans had to trade Vasquez and Lopez to make salaries work, just that contract on its own. How overpaid do you think Evans was? Do you think he was properly paid? What did you think overall of that signing?
I think it's a little bit of an overpay, but you know, that's what you have to do to get a restricted free agent away from another team. If you're valuing them properly, they're just going to match, the original team's just going to match that offer. So yeah, I think a lot of people are looking at it and saying $11 million a year for what Tyreke Evans is right now, or even what he has been, seems like a lot. But when you start considering the next 4 years of his career, that's where I think it's probably a better value. Whereas someone like Iguodala, you know, definitely a better player right now if you're trying to win immediately like the Warriors are, but he's headed the wrong direction over the next 4 years while his salary continues to escalate.
Yeah, and I mean, you had the Pelicans kind of looking at this upcoming year. You had them projected as 11th in the Western Conference. There's all of these factors. I mean, we haven't even hit on Eric Gordon and his health yet. I mean, where would you see their ceiling, and what do you see as the maybe two or three most important X factors that are going to swing the difference between them being an 11-12 seed and maybe fighting for that 7th or 8th playoff spot?
We obviously hit on one of them with Gordon's health. You know, that's such a big wild card, and I think one of the reasons the Pelicans are one of the more difficult teams to project for next season. I think the other thing, big thing that stands out to me is whether Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson can play together. You know, last year when they were on the court together, the Pelicans gave up 115 points per 100 possessions, which is just abysmal. And let's see, that's 8.4 more points per 100 possessions they gave up overall. So we have to see.
And they were already really bad.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you weren't starting. They weren't starting a very good point either. So, you know, we haven't seen whether Davis can work as a center full-time and whether he can play with Anderson full-time, and those are two of the things that are basically going to happen for the best case scenario to pan out for the Pelicans this season. So I think that's wild card number two maybe for me. And beyond that, I guess it would be, you know, whether how everything fits together. There's just so many new pieces, especially in the backcourt, you know, Austin Rivers development, things like that, who gets those minutes behind, you know, Holiday, Evans, and Gordon. So there's a lot of question marks about that. But I think the best case scenario, it's hard to see them cracking into the top six in the West, because I think those are going to be, you know, a notch, a tier ahead of the teams that are fighting for those last two playoff spots. But, I think seventh seed and, you know, somewhere in the mid-40s in wins is probably the upside.
So you mentioned him, Austin Rivers. If he plays 20 minutes a game for the Pelicans this year, do they have a hope at the playoffs?
Well, it depends whether he's playing 20 minutes a game because of the fact that he was, you know, the second lottery pick last year, or whether he's playing 20 minutes a game because he's legitimately outplayed Brian Roberts and Anthony Morrow and guys like that. So if it's the latter, then I think it's certainly the case, possible. You know, if it's the former, then that probably limits the upside quite a bit.
So I'm going to ask you to jump ahead on your poor partner Doolittle. How bad is Austin Rivers' projection?
You know, I was kind of surprised that he wasn't projected for more improvement this season than he was. You know, one of the factors I added into Shaney this offseason was a factor that regresses players to the mean. So usually that's, you know, for someone like, say, Jeremy Lin last year, where he hadn't played very much but had played at such a high level, usually that's bringing players down because it moves players towards replacement level instead of actually the mean. In Rivers' case, it actually bumps him up a little bit. But that still, despite that, you know, guys that played as poorly as he didn't tend to improve a ton the next season. So I was kind of surprised by that.
So he's that's really funny. You have him regressing to the mean, and he's still not improving very much. All right. Wow. Can I still hope for him at all? Is there any chance?
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to become a usable NBA player?
Yeah, I mean, you never are going to write off a guy before, I think, even the age of 20. And, you know, there are examples of players that have started really poorly and eventually become decent. But, you know, it's going to take not only improvement, but also sort of a change in the way he plays to a certain extent. And we saw some of that, I think, at the Summer League in Las Vegas. It was a more effective style that he played, but it still wasn't necessarily what he needs to do to be an efficient scorer, I don't think.
All right. So let me ask you this one question, because Michael and I, we like to talk about the fact that, you know, people always talk about how it's a 9-person draft in Austin Rivers, and, you know, because they can then draw the line at Austin Rivers and laugh. But Myers Leonard was 11. So those two guys, and you got to draft them with, like, some hope that they'll turn into something. Which one are you taking?
I mean, I think probably Myers, just because of the size, is always going to play well in the NBA. But then, you know, if you're saying that, the other guy you could throw in there, he was more effective as a rookie but had a similarly poor projection coming out of college, was Terrence Ross, who went 8.
Oh, really? I didn't know he had that bad of a projection.
Yeah.
He's an athletic freak, so.
He is, but one of those guys where it doesn't necessarily translate into, you know, in his case, steals or trips to the free throw line. So he was kind of an inefficient scorer in college. Did a little bit better in that regard last year in the NBA just because he shot so many threes and made them at a decent percentage. But, yeah, I mean, I think part of it is made just be a general function of last year's draft class.
Yeah, and I mean, in last year's draft class, it seemed like the conventional wisdom was that there was one potential star, superstar, Anthony Davis, and then a couple other guys that people liked. When it was actually in your Tyreek Evans piece, you put that if Davis becomes a star, perhaps this core can make the Pelicans contenders down the line, and it seems like with all the moves that the Pelicans have made, there's this, you know, there's always this if Anthony Davis becomes a star caveat, as if he had a disappointing rookie year last year. I mean, barring injuries, have you seen anything, whether it's with your own eyes or with with the numbers that leads you to believe that this guy won't become a star, possibly even a superstar down the line.
No, not really. I mean, I think that, yeah, that caveat is probably mostly about staying healthy and just that, you know, to some extent we never know. But, yeah, I mean, I think the fact that, you know, that he was kind of overshadowed by Damian Lillard in particular, and the fact that Drummond had such a crazy rookie year with the numbers he put up in limited minutes, those two guys got a lot of the attention in terms of rookie performance, and it took away from the fact that, you know, Davis had some issues at the defensive end of the floor and wasn't quite the instant contributor there that we expected that he was, but he was probably ahead of schedule offensively. And, yeah, when you look at, you know, guys that played as well as he did, as young as he did, it's a pretty select company, and it'd be surprising if he becomes anything but a star. You know, his top two comps from Shaney are number one Dwight Howard, number two Kevin Garnett. So, you know, that's the kind of class we're talking about potentially.
And do you think, I mean, just the guys that they've surrounded him with or what they've done? I mean, I've been thinking and trying to come up with a situation like this. I mean, usually when a guy is a projected superstar, when you have Kevin Durant, usually, you know, it's built very slowly around him with other young guys, or, you know, you have a Tim Duncan fall into a situation where he has veterans already in place. I can't remember ever seeing a situation in which, you know, you had this up and coming potential superstar and you threw a bunch of young veterans around him that are, you know, somewhat established and also, I would say, fairly ball dominant. I mean, do you think that this was a strategy, just looking at it from Anthony Davis's perspective and trying to develop him? Do you think that this long term will help his development, or do you think the slower route where he would have had more on his shoulders these first couple of years like Kevin Durant did, would that have been the way that you went? All financial issues aside, just player development.
You know, it's difficult to say for me because he's fairly unique in that superstar class where, you know, if he becomes what we expect him to become, I don't think it will necessarily be because of his scoring ability. I don't think he'll be a bad scorer, but he's probably not ever going to be a guy that's going to create a ton of his own offense. So that's where I think it does make sense to, you know, put playmakers and creators around him. You know, I think the one question would be, to go back to what I said about the question marks about the team, is forcing him to presumably play a lot of center minutes this season before his body has filled out. Whether that affects his development, I think, would be the larger issue to me.
So you're not, I mean, your warp doesn't project Greg Steemsma at 12 to 13 wins above average?
You know, a little bit below 12 to 13 wins.
So that was actually going to be one of my questions for you. You got Jeff Withey and you got Steemsma. Who you got in that race?
I think Withey, actually. I don't know. You know, I didn't see him down in Summer League, but he actually has the slightly better projection. I mean, you know, Steemsma, again, known quantity. You know what he can do. He's going to block shots. He's going to be a presence in the paint, and that's about it. Withey, I really liked a lot going into the draft. I thought I would have taken him in the late first round, a team like, you know, maybe Chicago or someone like that that needed a backup center. So a nice pickup for the Pelicans quietly in that sign and trade with Evans.
Yeah, when it was announced that Withey was part of it, I heard Michael McNamara cackling, and he lives halfway across the United States from me.
Yeah, and ironically, the other guy that the Pelicans got in that trade was pretty high in your rookie warp, Pierre Thomas. Or sorry, Pierre, I got Saints on the brain. Pierre Jackson. He's supposed to play over at France this year, but he was a guy that your system actually liked. Is he a guy that maybe long term is a solid bench player on this team, and maybe evens out that trade a little more?
I think so. He's a guy who can, you know, be in that kind of Nate Robinson mold of instant offense off the bench as an undersized point guard who who is a kind of shoot first type. He was really very effective last year at Baylor. So that's kind of disappointing that he doesn't get the chance to play right away, because I think he's one of the guys that is capable of doing that, but just too many options in the backcourt now.
And they got to play Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
You got to play.
My last question for you, I mean, you're looking at this Pelicans roster. While it's pretty stretched as far as, Dell using up all of its flexibility, you could argue that possibly he's asset collecting for a move down the line. I mean, he has a lot of guards who need the ball in their hand. I think the main five guys have a career usage rate of 114.4. He might not be done yet. We've heard rumblings of an Anderson for a Sheik trade. You know, obviously Eric Gordon is always a guy that could be moved. I was actually surprised he wasn't in your top 10 recently of guys who could be traded. But I mean, if you're at Dell Demps's desk and you're looking at this roster, what might be the move that you make? What would you be looking for to kind of fill out this roster in a way that you might like it a little bit better, both short term and long term?
You know, the Anderson Sheik thing is an obvious one for both sides. I think I like that a lot more for the Rockets than I do for the Pelicans. And I think if Davis eventually fills out and can handle center, and this might not be for a year or two down the line, but then at some point that Davis-Anderson pairing could really be something like what we saw with Dwight Howard and Anderson in Orlando. I really think that strong defensive center and a stretch four is one of the most potent combinations in the league. So I'd hate to give him up. You know, I think the ideal is probably Gordon being healthy the first part of the season, getting off to a pretty decent start, and then you're able to get some value for him. He obviously hasn't necessarily wanted to be part of it, and you've got a potential replacement ready made for him on the roster with Tyreke Evans, depending on what you get in return. So, you know, that does seem to make a lot of sense as the next move. And that's where, yeah, they do still have some flexibility, even if it's not necessarily in terms of going into free agency. It's that all these guys are movable and have value.
Right. He was in your top 10 column, and Derrick Rose and Eric Gordon are old AAU buddies. If you were the Pelicans, would you move Eric Gordon for Luol Deng? Straight up, even though Deng is coming off a little bit of a scary injury?
Man, it's almost more attractive from the Pelicans' standpoint, just in terms of getting rid of Gordon's money in some ways, than getting Deng, because he doesn't fit with the timeline with the rest of these guys very much.
Yeah, become a free agent. Yeah, Kawhi Leonard's just aren't sitting around waiting to be picked up. So I know those are the guys that the Pelicans would ideally target and our fans would want, but those guys, just aren't sitting around waiting for them to get traded. So if you're going to move Gordon, you probably have to take something back like that.
So I have one final question for you, because I'm trying to read into the mind of Dell, and I can't do it. So Al-Farouq Aminu. Michael and I spent all last season being frustrated by him, having like his one or two games, awesome rebounding numbers that, of course, then lend themselves to nice putbacks and decent assist numbers and all kinds of stuff. And then he has his stretches where he is probably one of the least effective small forwards on the offensive end in the league. Is there something in his numbers or projections that indicates he could be something more? Or, because I'm trying to figure out why Dell seems enamored enough that he went after him instead of someone, say, like Darrell Wright, who seems like custom made for this kind of roster.
Well, he's not alone in terms of not going after Darrell Wright. I thought he was kind of a perfect free agent for a lot of teams and ended up getting a much smaller deal than I expected in Portland, especially the way the market developed for all sorts of shooters, including you can maybe throw Anthony Morrow, who wasn't even in a rotation last year, into that group. But, with Aminu, it's always going to be a question of whether he can develop a jumper. He's that far away, basically. I mean, Trevor Reese is one of the guys that comes up is his best comparables in Cheney. And, we saw when Ariza had that one season, even that one playoffs maybe, where he was shooting the ball well from three-point range, just how valuable he could be. And, I think you're just always hoping with Aminu that he adds that to everything else that he does on the court.
Would be.
I'm not holding my breath.
It's a safer move.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's only 1 year, so maybe he's there for filler, right? I guess you can't trade, though, a guy unless he gives you permission to, unless, if he's only on for a one-year deal.
Yep. I did finally understand after I read the CBA FAQ from Larry Kuhn a little closer over the summer why they signed him to the exact contract that they turned down the team option for last fall, which I thought was endlessly amusing. But apparently that's the most you can possibly sign a guy for because they don't want you turning down the team option and then turning around and signing them to a bigger contract.
Right.
Like, I'm still confused by the by that theory as well. I didn't see Aminu as being a guy who's going to be able to hit the market and suddenly have like, you know, mid-level exception style offers on the table. So confused.
Lots of confusion. So.
Okay, so I'm not gonna hit you with the try to make you ruin your projections. We'll wait. I think it's the fourth. I think is when the Pelicans are going to be. On the clock on ESPN to see, you know, what your guys' projection is for them. So I'll be refreshing repeatedly that day. And then I'll be firing off angry emails, I'm sure.
That sounds about right. And then a few weeks later, we'll have the team projection and the team preview for the upcoming season. So it's basically all the content that we previously were doing for the Pro Basketball Prospectus Annual, just all of it now online on Insider.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
And I'll say it. I'm not trying to trump up for ESPN, but it's really, it's a couple of bucks, and the content on ESPN Insider, I honestly don't know how you could live without it. So I know I'm on there every day. So I would suggest it, even if it's just for that.
And I will also say that even if for some reason you don't like what Kevin Pelton's writing, the comments to Kevin Pelton's articles are some of the most amusing things in the world. It's like YouTube on crack. The comments are so over the top. It's awesome.
I try to stay away for the benefit of my own sanity. So if you come across something really good, you'll have to pass it along.
Okay. All right. So thanks very much for coming on the show, Kevin.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We'll have to check in some point during the season.
Yeah, when we're proving all of your projections wrong. Thanks very much.
All right, have a good one.
All right, so that's Kevin Pelton's take on our team, Michael. Do you disagree with anything he said?
No, I mean, I really understand. I understand all the risks. I understand the fact that it's quite frankly hard to project because I've been looking and wanted to do some pieces this summer comparing this Pelicans team to other teams and who they might look like, who they might play like, you know, not only this year but in the future. And it's just so hard to find any other team that ever built this way, you know, as far as their timeline, as far as the type of roster that they put together. I mean, I was listening to an old podcast yesterday, actually, and you know, I forgot about this, but you brought up a point of, you know, you basically had the best guard from three bad teams and you put them all together on one team the following year. And you just can't think of anybody who's done that. So, I could completely see this going either way. I do think that the one fixed, you know, variable on this team is Anthony Davis, though. I feel like, you know, I read a Grantland article with Zach Lowe and him talking to Bill Simmons, even on the podcast, and it's all this, well, you know, the Pelicans are banking on Anthony Davis being a superstar for this all to work. And I don't know where we lost the narrative that he wasn't going to be that. He had such an impressive rookie year in so few minutes. I just think that's a given, and I think that's the one thing that I tend to feel that I don't think most of the national sports writers think when they assess this team both now and moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree that Anthony Davis, just like Chris Paul did. I mean, if there hadn't been John Hollinger on ESPN writing that Chris Paul just had the best rookie season since Magic Johnson as a guard, nobody was celebrating him as an amazing player, because he just looked at his stats and it was 16-7. Well, 16-7 is not that impressive, but if you look at, you know, how he was doing it, and I mean, he was amazing. And the same story here. It's poor old New Orleans, small little town, no one wants to pay attention to, but got one of the amazing players here again, and it's going to be excellent.
Yeah, and I mean, people remember Kevin Durant now, but as far as after his second year, I remember reading articles from, you know, similar advanced statisticians saying that Oklahoma City is better when Kevin Durant is off the court, and he's a good offensive player, but he's not as great as everybody thinks. And having doubts about Kevin Durant again, another guy in a small market, people were saying that he was going to be out of OKC the first chance he got. I just, I think if Anthony Davis was in another market, you would see that hype. But I firmly believe, I think that's the center point of it all. I think he's going to make all those guards better and vice versa. And, you know, I just did a recent article and I said, I truly believe that that's the number one factor this entire season of all the ones that we discuss, and looking into Tyreek trade and the Drew trade and yada yada yada, will Aminu develop a 15-footer? I think, you know, all of that stuff is just icing on the cake that is Anthony Davis, and it's really going to be about how much he develops to see where this team goes, not only this year but in the future.
Yeah, and I also, the only other thing I've seen over the summer, people have repeated, is that, you know, the Pelicans have just destroyed any flexibility they had. This is the team, they've committed hundreds of millions of dollars to these few players. This is the NBA. And you look at this team, and other than Eric Gordon, who I will still say is a contract you're not moving to get any sort of quality until he can prove he can stay healthy. Tyreek Evans, Jrue Holiday, and Ryan Anderson are all eminently tradable for other pieces that might fit better. So even if this team doesn't click, if they're all like, you know, they're going at each other trying to steal the ball from one another so they could each take shots, which I don't see likely to happen. But if it does, this team is not locked in. And anyone who says it's locked in hasn't paid any attention to the NBA, where players like Gilbert Arenas can be traded. And Rashard Lewis can be traded. I mean, you can always find somebody to move a player to, and these guys are of high enough quality that you're going to get something back that's good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see whether, I mean, it wouldn't have made any sense, for at least from our perspective, but there's a rumor a couple weeks back that, you know, there had been talks of an Eric Gordon for Zach Randolph swap. I mean, if you think this roster is weird now, imagine if that would have went down, and now arguably your three best players are power forwards. So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of different ways that it could go. We don't know how it's going to play out. Like I said in my piece, you could make an argument this is going to be a 26-28 win team if the injuries come back and all goes wrong, and I could buy an argument of a low 50s to mid 50s win team if every single thing goes right. The one thing I know, though, is that national media is talking about the Pelicans. The rebrand is exciting. You know, the new things that they're doing at the arena is exciting. The fact that we have an owner that wants to win right now is not a thing that, you know, the franchise should be being bashed for, but something that should be celebrated. So, I mean, we're a couple of weeks away. I think we're, what, 9 days away from our first preseason game. I mean, we're getting close. At the very least, we have a fun team again, a team that is going to be trying to win, not quote unquote develop young guys. So, you know, however this plays out, at least it's going to be fun and exciting.
Yeah. And let's all hope that since Eric Gordon is surrounded by his friends and he might have a chance of success for the first time in his NBA career, that suddenly he's going to be a demon out there. That's like my most fondest hope, the one most likely to be dashed.
It might happen, sir. Well, yep. I just want to say thanks again to Kevin Pelton coming in. We have a lot of really interesting guests coming up, and I'm looking forward to the season. We're just days away from Pelicans basketball.
Yep. So everybody, take a look at Bourbon Street Shots. See all our new posts. We're going to be having a whole slew of new stuff. No, it was a little slower this summer, but that's what you should expect. So, yeah, we've got a lot of really good content coming out over the next couple weeks. So tune in.